What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to another live edition of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and Nick Cuvallo with us again to preview the second round of the Eastern Conference. How are we doing, guys?
Not too bad. What's up, NBA?
Second round. We're here. We're moving along nicely.
Yeah. I mean, the first round didn't last long necessarily in Eastern Conference, but there was some really good games with some really good drama. But this second round literally has probably four of the top six teams in the NBA.
Yeah. So, especially in the East. The East is literally the top four seeds.
Yeah, you have no issue thinking like, oh, the best team's not going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. I think everything's going to wind up where the right team gets rewarded. But before we get started, as always, check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. But guys, we're going to start with Toronto and Philadelphia. Both teams took care of their opponent in five games. You know, Toronto beat Orlando, Philadelphia beat Brooklyn, sadly. But getting into that, let's talk storylines of this series. What are you looking for in terms of that?
Sure. So like you just mentioned, like, oh, sorry, Corey, I know we had agreed to not you going first.
Go ahead.
You know what? I just had to jump in. I had to jump in, right?
He's
hyped. We're just talking about, like, we're talking about how all four of these teams that are here right now, we expected to be here, right? And Toronto and the Sixers both have expectations to move forward past the second round. And so, you know, we have here two teams meeting. One of them is going to fall out, quote unquote, too early for their preferences, right? And so both of these teams have huge offseason implications, all depending on this series. I think that's a huge storyline to look at. Obviously, we're going to have, the social media crazy, a couple of flagrant foul points collected already, Embiid versus the cool, calm Kawhi. So we're going to be looking at these, like, streamlined Raptors versus the more, rough housing Sixers. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest storyline for me is the fact that there's so many free agent implications in this series, right? Kawhi Leonard, upcoming free agent Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris. How does one of these teams getting bounced in this round impact that? Kawhi, can he bring this team to the next level? Can they get to the Eastern Conference Finals? Obviously, with Toronto the last several years, Nick, you know better than anybody, being a Raptors fan, they just can't seem to get over the hump. Is this the year that Kawhi brings them to the next level? And then for the Sixers, yeah, I mean, they won in five. There were moments in that series, though, where they didn't look overly impressive. Embiid's health. What does Embiid's health look like? Does that limit him in this series going against Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol? How does Ben Simmons look when he's facing a much tougher defensive scheme than he faced during Brooklyn? Obviously, he had his way later in that series, but this is not going to be the same series. I saw highlights today that Kawhi Leonard, he pretty much has owned Ben Simmons this year when they've matched up. For me, those are the storylines I'm looking at in this series.
Yeah, and like you guys touched on, I think the free agent implications is probably the biggest storyline here because both teams have a lot on the line. You know, they took a risk acquiring the players they did, and if they get knocked out, especially in a short series, you could see those teams lose these players. And obviously, like you mentioned, Corey, I think Joel Embiid's health is a big factor. As dominant he was in that first round, he did not move well. Toronto's going to do a better job of kind of spreading him around. Also, another low-key thing I'm looking forward to is I know Kyle Lowry and Ben Simmons have kind of gotten to it in the past. Definitely see some drama there. Ben Simmons seems he wants to go at every buddy, even including Jared Dudley. So that should be a lot of fun. And then I'm also interested to see, you know, Drake versus Meek Mill. Obviously, they're friends now, but that's always the little fun storyline.
Yeah, for sure. Can't wait.
Now, moving on from there, which is somewhat connected, it's matchups. You know, there's like a ton of really, really good matchups in the series. Which ones stick out to you guys?
Oh, obviously for me, it's got to be Gasol and Embiid, right? Because Gasol did a huge job limiting Vucevic last series against the Magic. And so can he do the same for the Sixers star big man? Obviously, the Sixers have a bit more star power surrounding him, but Embiid is their best player. And so if Gasol can do even half as good of a job and limit Embiid and, you know, maybe take advantage of his poor health, as awful as that is, you know, we hate to see that in the playoff atmosphere. But if he can erase a lot of Embiid's impact, the Raptors have a really good shot at this one. And that's one of the big matchups for me. What about you, Corey?
For me, I think that's a great one. If you went anywhere else, that's what I probably would have picked. For me, is Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard. Both of these guys are probably going to see a lot of each other. Both of them are known to be two-way players. Obviously, Kawhi is at a much different level than Jimmy Butler, but that's going to be a series of two guys who are hard-nosed on defense and who's going to have the bigger edge. Obviously, I'm going with Kawhi in that, but I think that's going to be an interesting matchup because both guys are also going to be impending free agents, as we mentioned, and I don't know, two guys who are both hard-nosed.
Yeah, I think there's, like I said, a lot of great matchups, obviously Gasol and Embiid. I'm looking more so as like Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris versus Pascal Siakam and Kawhi Leonard. Then you could toss Jimmy Butler in there and Danny Green, because I could see all these guys kind of switching up matchups throughout the series. Danny Green probably staying mostly on Jimmy Butler, but I could see Siakam on Ben Simmons for a bit, Kawhi and Ben Simmons for a bit, or Tobias Harris, vice versa. I think a lot depends on the lineups that Philadelphia is going to throw out there and how Toronto matches. A lot of interesting stuff. And then I think you look at Kyle Lowry's probably going to be chasing around J.J. Redick. And if J.J. Redick can get hot, that's a big factor in the series. Lowry, obviously known for his defense and his toughness he brings, he's going to get into him a little bit. And can Kyle Lowry attack on the other end if he has J.J. Redick on him, or whatever assignment they throw his way? So literally, I think they both starting lineups are full of great matchups. And then you get to the bench, when I think this could be a deciding factor in the series, because Philadelphia's bench was a little bit more productive than expected, but I think Toronto's bench was a little bit less productive than expected.
Yeah, I mean,
look at terms of like pure talent on the bench.
Yeah, how good is Boban? How good is Boban in this upcoming series would be a big question mark for me. You know, obviously he kind of had his way against the Nets, but how does that match up against the Raptors? And my screen's frozen, isn't it?
Yes.
1 minute.
Oh, it's back.
So, is it back?
Oh.
Nope. Nick, no. You go ahead.
Okay. No, sorry. Yeah, so the Sixers bench was actually more productive than the Raptors in the first round of the playoffs, but like Nick just said, the Raptors have a little bit more talent overall on their bench, so we're looking to see how that translates into this round against each other. Now, if the Sixers are staggering their stars, the Raptors obviously can match that. They can go on the floor with just Lowry and Kawhi one at a time to kind of like negate that as much as they can, because the Sixers obviously do have a few more quote-unquote star players than the Raptors do. But in terms of overall roster depth, I think the needle still points a little bit in Toronto's direction.
Yeah, I think they're – and it's not like Kawhi and Siakam can't play big minutes. Both those guys are still young, and they have plenty of juice in them left. You know, Marcus Gasol, Kyle Lowry, they might end up playing less minutes or something compared to some of the Philadelphia guys. But it's going to be interesting in how these teams match up. And Corey brought up Boban before. I think that's an interesting guy. Can they take him out of the series? Because there was points he played against the Nets, he was dominant offensively, but defensively he's literally like a statue out there. So there's just a lot of elements. And I think we didn't even mention it, coaching matchup is going to be huge. You know, Brett Brown versus Nick Nurse. Brett Brown stepped up in round one better than I expected. And Nick Nurse, I think, was solid in round one as well.
I give the edge of Nick Nurse in that, by the way, too.
Ooh, giving the edge to the young coach. And, it was a lot of talk about that for Brett Brown in the first round. I thought he did make some good adjustments, but also his team is a lot more talented. Anything else in terms of matchups you guys wanted to touch on?
Nothing really interests me as much as Gasol and Embiid, because if Embiid is – if he's negating Gasol, if he's getting over that our big man, like, I don't really know what the Raptors can throw at him. Like, I don't know if Ibaka will be effective. Like, Embiid really – is the only really scary thing coming from a Raptors perspective sort of deal. I'd really be interested to see what they're going to do with Siakam when Siakam and Kawhi are both on the floor, because I know Tobias Harris may not be as good of a defensive matchup, and maybe Siakam can exploit that. But I think for Toronto, the real question is Embiid.
I would also look at three-point shooting for both squads. I think the Raptors are, I think, clearly a better three-point shooting team, whereas we saw in last round between the Sixers, it looks like Tobias Harris and J.J. Redick are the only guys who can make threes. Now, granted, Joel Embiid will shoot a couple. They don't necessarily fall, and Jimmy Butler, again, is not an efficient three-point shooter. But I wonder how that battle evens out, because the Raptors are definitely going to shoot a ton of threes.
And then Mike Scott coming off the bench, is he healthy? Obviously, he has the Bruce Healy, got injured in that last game. He's a big component to what they do in terms of spacing the floor. If they go to that small lineup and they play Ben Simmons a little bit more, like you mentioned, I'm really intrigued to see what they do against Toronto's, you know, offensive players in terms of Kawhi and Pascal Siakam. Ben Simmons is clearly a better defender than Tobias Harris, and he did an excellent job on D'Angelo Russell. But this is going to be a different, you know, monster they're facing in the second round. And then also, is Tobias Harris going to be able to defend one of those guys? Or are they going to take advantage of every matchup? Because you can't really cheat over for either of these teams because there's so much talent on the floor.
Yep. It's a great, like, it's just unbelievable. I can't wait for this series. I mean, although I do think there is a pretty clear favorite. We'll touch on that very soon.
Ooh. But back to the point you talked about, Marcus on Embiid, I think, is clearly going to be one of the matchups, because if Embiid's dominant, it kind of changes the whole dynamic of the series. Now, getting to that, would that be an X factor for you, Embiid's dominance?
Yeah, definitely. Embiid's dominance versus Kawhi's dominance. Like, those are the two players I see in this series that can really take over a game. Now, of course, like, Jimmy Butler can take over one game at a time. Maybe Danny Green catches fire from beyond the arc for the other side. But really, those two are going to be the game changers at any given point in the series.
Yeah, I mean, this at this stage of the playoffs, it's whose stars are going to shine brightest, right? And for the Sixers, can Joel Embiid muster up enough health to be that factor for the Sixers? And can Kawhi be what he was in the first round against the Magic? You know, we saw a couple times we had 30 plus points and he was just dominant, not missing from the field, shooting over 60%. If Kawhi is going to play at that high level, the Raptors are really tough to beat because they're already a solid defensive unit. And then obviously for the Sixers, we saw, you know, what they're just not the same team as Joel Embiid's out, not out there. Now, granted, they did win game three when Joel Embiid sat against Brooklyn, but they're just a better team when he's out there. He's a different force, a different threat. Their offense moves a lot smoother when they have him down low. So how can he exert his dominance?
Now, for you guys, what would be more impactful? Let's just hypothetically say both guys are dominant on their end of the floor. Is Embiid's dominance more impactful than Kawhi's dominance?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, there's just no answer for Embiid. Like, if he's down in the paint and getting his, like, dunks, tip-ins, layups, like, that's just so demoralizing for an offense. Versus if Kawhi's hitting his shots, he's hitting his shots. But it's far more likely that Kawhi would miss, like, his mid-rangers and his three balls than Embiid, like, just hammering us away down low.
I go with Joel Embiid as well, because Joel Embiid hits you with offense, with rebounding, with rim protection. Now, granted, Kawhi Leonard can score, and Kawhi Leonard is a lockdown defender, but a presence like Joel Embiid, if you can lock down and protect the paint, it completely changes other teams' offense. So I think Joel Embiid, if he's firing on all cylinders, is the more impactful player.
Especially because you're forced to really double-team him, that impacts your offense a lot. So let's say Embiid's down there and Gasol can't cover him. Someone's going to have to pull off, and then maybe they get open three. And I think that's where it'll come down to a Brett Brown adjustment. Is he getting the right lineup out there that has the proper spacing and shooting? And maybe that means, you know, sitting one of your more talented guys so you can exploit a matchup. And I think with the Kawhi spectrum, it's like double-teaming a wing is a lot easier to recover on than probably double-teaming somebody down by the rim, especially with three-point shooting now in the NBA. And then just the fact is the center of whatever the floor is in almost any sport. If you're dominating in the middle, you're breaking everything up, and that's what Embiid can really do.
Yeah. The one thing I will say for the Toronto's perspective is I think they have a good shot of not necessarily limiting Joel Embiid, because they have the ability to go between Ibaka and Marcus Gasol, which I think is in favor of them. As for the Nets, you know, yeah, they had Jared Allen, who was in foul trouble, at least in game one, then Ed Davis, who got banged up. But having guys like Gasol and Ibaka, it's not like there's ever going to be a moment where Embiid does not have a very good defensive center in his way.
Yeah, I mean, and Ed Davis literally played 27 minutes in the first game, and he pretty much didn't play the rest of the series. So it was going against Jared Allen, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and Jared Dudley for Embiid. I don't think Serge Ibaka is as good a defender as he once was. You know, he has his moments.
Right.
But I think he at least has a presence out there. And one thing I didn't really mention before in terms of double teaming, one advantage that Toronto has is they have a lot of lanky guys. You know, you look at Kawhi, you look at Siakam, Danny Green. Nick, what's the status of OG for this series? Is he likely out, or is he going to be back in the end of the series?
Yeah, he's expected to possibly be back by game two, so he could come midway through the series. But, I mean, it is possible also that you just don't see him. But that's also because the Raptors are just so deep, right? Like, they do have, like you just said, a lot of arms already on the roster, a lot of length, a lot of paint cloggers on defense. OG, they're probably going to take their time with them, right? Because they really, as far as his role, he's very much an ancillary piece. He's no higher up the rotation than the eighth, ninth guy. So I imagine they won't really want to rush OG back, nor do I think he'll really play that much of a role in swinging this series, quote unquote. He's more of a nice to have for the Raptors. I think they have the tools that they need already on the roster.
One thing I would look at OG, though, in terms of what else they have on the bench, is he provides a body type that matches up really well with a Ben Simmons or a Tobias Harris that has a little bit more length. Where you look in the previous series against Brooklyn, when they had those smaller matchups, they were able to take advantage. And I think OG can provide that. But like you said, he's a young guy. They're not going to rush him back. He would have an impact, but it wouldn't be huge.
Yeah, you could just push McCaw down as soon as he comes back. But even McCaw, I don't think we'll be seeing too many minutes. This series means just far too much to the Raptors. I can definitely see Kawhi averaging it like 38 minutes per game for this series. And same with Siakam.
Yeah, I think it's fair. You might even see him touch 40 if it's that competitive.
Yeah.
Now, talking other X factors, what is it for you guys? You know, Corey brought up three-point shooting, which I thought was an excellent point.
Is Lowry going to show up? Like, for me, like, if Lowry can show up consistently every game through the series, the Raptors have a really good shot of doing like what all the predictions are calling them for them to do, right? Like, I see everybody's mostly leaning in a Raptors direction, but I think that's all very contingent on the play of Lowry. Like, scoring 0 points just will not cut it, and I understand that he's giving the mix of assists and rebounds and charges and loose balls recovered and all that, but they need Lowry to be at an A plus level this whole series for them to take down this loaded Sixers team.
I mean, that's how it is for them in this entire playoff run, is how good can Kyle Lowry be, right? Can he be the second or third best player? Now, he doesn't have to be the second offensive option, but he has to be the second or third best player on this team, I feel like, behind Kawhi. We know what he brings to the defensive end of the ball, but can he be that offensive threat? Like you mentioned, the only game they lost against the Magic was the game where he, unfortunately, didn't score a point. And this is not going to be an easier matchup for him. I think there's chances for him to have some decent big games, but can Kyle Lowry be effective is definitely important.
I think there will be opportunities for him to score, because one thing that Philadelphia did not do a good job is defend the pick and roll, or guards that were able to kind of expose them in those situations. Let's say D'Angelo Russell shoots 40% from the field in the previous series. I think the series is completely different just because they were giving him plenty of mid-range shots and little floater shots. So it's going to be up to Kyle Lowry to be aggressive in those situations, especially if Embiid's dropping back like he was in the previous series because he's not 100% healthy.
I'll say another area too for an outsider would be rebounding.
100%.
Both of these teams are very good rebounding squads. You look at the big bodies on the Sixers. I think the rebounding is where the Sixers can actually dominate. You know, Ben Simmons is good at getting rebounds. Joel Embiid obviously can get rebounds. Tobias Harris isn't a slouch at getting rebounds. And Jimmy Butler, he just feels like he's everywhere. It's like his since they got Tobias Harris, it's kind of like Jimmy Butler doesn't necessarily focus on offense anymore. He focuses on all the intangibles on the defensive end. So for me, rebounding is where the 76ers can really take advantage of the Raptors.
Yeah, and Philly leads the postseason in rebound percentage. Obviously, some of that's the matchup. But having guys like Joel Embiid and Boban, there's not many teams in the entire NBA that have two centers of that size. And they're throwing out probably arguably the tallest starting lineup in the NBA, with J.J. Redick being the shortest guy, your point guard 6'10", at Ben Simmons. That's a major factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Philadelphia's rebounding is something the Raptors are going to have to deal with.
And a lot of it comes down to just boxing out guys. Like Corey mentioned, Jimmy Butler does a good job of kind of getting in there. Ben Simmons from the point guard possession gets in there sometimes. So it's just like staying engaged and doing what you have to do on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
What else are we looking at X-factor wise? One thing I think is, you know, the overall experience. Toronto has a little bit more experience, but they do have that issue of playoff woes in the fast. Obviously, that doesn't concern Danny Green, Kawhi, or Marc Gasol, but it is something concerning the entire franchise.
I mean, I think experience always plays a factor. You know, the 76ers obviously last year got bounced in the second round. And then you look at the Raptors, obviously some of these guys like Kyle Lowry have struggled in the playoffs, but Kawhi, champion, Danny Green, champion, Marc Gasol has had deep playoff runs. He was part of that upset with the Memphis Grizzlies several years back. So these guys know how to win. I think you can't. Experience is crucial. I think sometimes it gets undersold, but playoff experience is actually important, because when it gets down to crunch time, it gets down to money time, can your guys find out how to win? And we've kind of seen that some past series, you know, whether it was the Brooklyn Nets or the Indiana Pacers, having guys who have been there before and know how to settle it down and know how to take advantage of missed opportunities and focus on, you know, important possessions, I think that goes in favor of the Raptors, and especially in this kind of series.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at other X factors, and I think you definitely have to consider Toronto's really good record against Philadelphia recently. Like, Kawhi just hasn't lost against the Sixers. He's 13-0 against them. And so,
if the Sixers, that's so crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts. Like, I saw that stat pulled up immediately as soon as the Raptors and Sixers were, like, destined to meet up, and I was like, wow. Like, there's definitely got to be at least a little bit behind that stat, because they're going to be told that for sure in the locker room. Somebody's bound to hear it on either team, right? So there's some bad juju going on there with the Sixers, and who, like, maybe they could just point to Kawhi's effectiveness against the franchise, or it could just be all for naught. The Raptors might lose game one, and there you go, the streak's broken. But it's something to read into for sure.
Yeah, I think some of it also is the fact is a lot of the time he was facing them, they were still during the process, and last year he didn't play, so that kind of probably plays a role in it as well. He was in the
West. Inflated, yeah.
Yeah, and he only played them twice a year, but I believe he's 3-0 against them this year when he plays, so that's a huge factor. Cam actually just wrote an excellent piece on OTGBasketball.com where he points out, I think Kawhi's averaging over 30 points a game against them this year in the regular season, but also Joel Embiid's been very dominant against them. So check that preview out. But getting to the prediction portion of this series, what do you guys got?
I got Raptors 4-3.
I got Raptors in 6.
I got Raptors in 7. Okay. So we're all on the Raptors here. I promise I'm not being salty about the last series. It's just I've been going with Toronto, I think, from the beginning of the year. That's been my finals pick. Just like the fact of Kawhi, the versatility they have defensively. And I didn't even expect Siakam to be this good. Like, he was amazing last series, and he really jumped up. And I probably am going to change my most improved pick to Siakam after a really good first round. But finals MVP.
I can't believe I just heard that.
That's big. That's big, honestly.
MVP of the series?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's going to be Kawhi Leonard. If the Raptors are winning this series, it's because Kawhi Leonard is the best player on the court. And that's also why I'm picking the Raptors. It's not that I don't think the 76ers, lack talent. It's just I think the Raptors have the better player. They have the player who can step up, make the biggest impact when it matters most. And if Joel Embiid's not 100%, I think that still goes in favor. As we said, you know, Joel Embiid has this knee issue. It's not going to get better this playoff run. He is never going to be 100% this playoff run. I don't care what anybody says. He can get as many quarter-own shots as he wants. He can do all the rehab, sit out a game or two. He's not going to be fully healthy. I almost knocked my headphone out. For me, it's Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably Kawhi Leonard as well. I would like... See, Siaka might be the difference maker in that he's the one who shifts just enough attention off Kawhi and delivers enough points himself that he is, like, you know, maybe the most important player on the Raptors team. But I just don't think he'd be the guy that they would give this award to. Like, I think Kawhi's numbers will just be overwhelming, you know, just too much in his favor here. But yeah, it's Kawhi Leonard.
And I think Kawhi's defense is something we're going to keep an eye on in this series, not only on ball, but off ball, just that length, you know, the claws out there. If you had to rank the top three most impactful players for each team in the series, what would it be in terms of if the Raptors were to win and then in terms of Philadelphia was going to win?
Okay, so for the Raptors, the most impactful would probably go Leonard, Siakam, and then Gasol. And then for the Sixers, I'd probably say it would go Embiid, Simmons, Butler.
For me, it'd probably be Kawhi, Siakam, and Lowry, with Gasol being a close fourth, maybe even tied for third. And then from the Sixers' perspective, it'd be Embiid, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler. I think Ben Simmons matters because if Ben Simmons gets limited in the half court and Ben Simmons is like a useless offensive threat for them, that entire team is useless. Not useless, but it just limits their – I hate using words like that. It limits them, obviously. If they're not getting out of transition and Ben Simmons has to work in the half court set, he's not being effective, like that's just not going to be a series for Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I like the picks. I like Kawhi, Siakam, and Gasol because we talked about that Embiid matchup being so huge. I think Lowry will have to be good, though. I think, like Corey said, he'll be tied or right in that mix. And actually for Philadelphia, I'm going to go Embiid, Simmons, and Tobias Harris because I think Tobias Harris is a guy, especially at that size. If Ben Simmons is playing well and Tobias Harris is playing well, it's putting a lot of pressure. And he's a guy, and when he's aggressive, he can hit his shots. But there's moments when he's not aggressive. Game one in that Brooklyn series, he was a non-factor. So, and he's also going to have different matches in the series going against people around his size. Jimmy Butler, like Corey mentioned, I think he's going to be good regardless, and he's going to do those intangibles, do those small things, and kind of just be gritty over there. He's not really going to, I don't think, take over any games.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I just, like, for me, the only thing that gets Jimmy above Tobias is just that, like, Jimmy has been a little bit more. I don't know, we saw game one of Sixers Nets where Jimmy was really the only thing right about the Sixers offense, and I think he could have a few of those moments if Nick Nurse manages to foil whatever Philly's got on the floor. Jimmy might be the only guy who's got anything working, you know, but like Tobias, I could also very likely, he's also very likely to perform highly. So definitely in the mix.
And I think what I'm saying is like, I think Jimmy will be better, but I think they really need Tobias Harris to be better to win the series.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now moving on to Boston, Milwaukee, another amazing series that we just, you know, happened to see in the second round. What are some storylines in this one?
Oof, like we just added a piece again, I think written by Cam on OTG about like Kyrie Irving and this series being a big part of his offseason decision. And again, a lot of that has to do with Giannis. You know, Giannis is going to be in the East. This could be his like, you know, coming of age playoff series, right? Where we really see him dominate, knock out the preseason favorite, you know, the Celtics, which were the preseason favorite to make the finals. This series could mean a whole lot for Giannis's legacy. It could mean a lot for Kyrie in staying in Boston. The rest of the Celtics roster, you know, will they extend Al Horford? A lot of this, you know, it's a huge series for both teams. Again, just like with Raptors and Sixers, a lot of postseason stuff riding on us.
What do you got, Corey?
Sorry, the storyline that we're talking about? It cut out a little bit. I mean, for Boston, it's can this team get back to the standard that we all had for them going into the year? Like Nick said, obviously, Bill Simmons picked 67 wins. I had them getting 67 wins. I had them being in the Eastern Conference Finals. Oddly enough, I also had the Bucks being the dark horse. So it's only right that these two teams match up in my eyes. And then, like you mentioned, I think the impending free agency of Kyrie. Cambridge wrote a good piece about that, how this series could be really important to what Kyrie Irving decides to do this offseason. If the Celtics don't get past the Bucks, does Kyrie see the situation in Boston as too turbulent? And then you look at Milwaukee. as Nick said, can Antetokounmpo take that next step? Can this team finally get to that next level? Obviously, we've seen the last couple of years, they've been like right on the cusp of reaching the next level and being a true threat, a true contender. They've done everything right to this point, 60 wins. They made easy work of the somewhat hobbled Detroit Pistons with Blake Griffin, being banged up. And also, shout out to Blake Griffin, doing everything he could in game four to be out there and play with that team. That was a tremendous performance. I haven't gotten to talk about that on the pod, but great by him. Can that team show up? And then both coaches, I think, have a lot to prove. Mike Budenholzer, although he's had some great regular season success, he's never been able to get anything done in the playoffs necessarily in deep playoff runs. And then Brad Stevens, we've kind of talked about Brad Stevens as, the next great head coach in the NBA. He's a genius, a mastermind, but he hasn't necessarily reach expectations. Obviously, the Eastern Conference Finals last year with the Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown and that team that he brought as far as they could. What can he do now when everybody healthy? Gordon Hayward, how does he look now that he's finally starting to gain form? There's a ton of storylines in this series. This is probably, for me, obviously Nick's a Raptors fan, so he's more interested in the other series. For me, this is my Eastern Conference Finals in a lot of ways.
I think for me, both series are pretty equal. Like, I think there's plenty of storylines, especially with free agency for both. And I think a lot of people are looking at the Celtics side and Kyrie Irving and the Giannis's impact on that, like Cam mentioned, his excellent article. But for Milwaukee, it's also a lot of free agent stuff. They have Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Malcolm Brogdon. If a team gets knocked out in the second round, they're not going to want to go in the luxury tax, or some of these guys might be more open to leaving than if they were to make a run to the finals and lose to the Warriors. It might be like, all right, we'll run this back. So that's a factor I think people aren't really talking about. But you mentioned coaching. I think that's huge. Brad Stevens, Bud, what are they going to do? Obviously, both of them really want to head to the finals. Then there's just obviously Giannis's legacy. Like, this is where you make your name. This is where you want to be an all-time great. You got to have a big series right here. You're the favorite team in this matchup. You got to go out and win it.
Yeah.
Anything else in terms of storylines you want to mention, guys?
I mean, Brad Stevens' reputation is kind of taken a little bit of a dink since last year. Last year with Kyrie and Hayward out, he took a team full of really young guys to the Eastern Conference Final, LeBron James to 7 games, and Brad Stevens was being hailed as a top three NBA coach. And then with the slide back this year, the Celtics have endured, his reputation has been dinged a little bit, and he has a chance to make up a lot of that here in this series. That's one more storyline that I would throw in there.
Yeah, and I think there's no excuse, like Corey kind of mentioned, being fully healthy this year, having Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. It's like, all right, there's no excuse for you not to match up. The talent-wise, it's pretty equal. So it's not like, one team is completely better than the other. Obviously, Giannis is a huge factor. Getting to that, what are some matchups you're looking for? Obviously, Giannis versus the entire Celtics defense is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Giannis versus the Celtics defense. Middleton versus Jaylen Brown or Tatum or whoever they throw on him. George Hill or Bledsoe and how they will try to slow down Irving. I think Kyrie is pretty much going to dominate that matchup just the same way I think Giannis will dominate whoever's on him. In fact, I don't even really see this as a series of quote unquote matchups. Like, I think both team has ones that they win pretty decisively. And I think this team, like this series might just be who can score more, whose offense will be more like cohesive, which team will outlast the other in a sort of way. Like, I don't really see this being too much of like a defensive slogfest or too much ISO ball that's unsuccessful down the court every way. Like, I think it's going to be like a very appealing series on like in multiple facets, like just about every matchup.
I mean, I think the big matchups, like you mentioned, like Nick mentioned, are, can anyone stop Antetokounmpo? What's the game plan for him? Because obviously you can't stop him. You can try and limit him. I mean, the biggest matchup for the Celtics perspective is, can you limit Chris Middleton? Because if you guys remember last year, Chris Middleton absolutely destroyed Boston. I think he shot over 50% from three, or at least above 45%. I know he was absolutely ridiculous. Can they limit him? Who gets thrown at him? For me, the most important matchup probably is bench versus bench. How does the Celtics bench match up against the Bucks bench? Obviously, the Bucks added George Hill, Nikola Mirotic. Pat Connaughton has been really good for them as well. Can Pau Gasol, depending on how he looks, what does this team look like that bench-wise? And then for the Celtics, Gordon Hayward's finally healthy. Terry Rozier, does he get up again facing Eric Bledsoe and knowing that guy, last year, quote-unquote, he owned? So for me, that's an interesting matchup, is just the bench units, because I think the starters are going to get theirs, but whose bench can come off and really help keep the teams afloat?
Yeah, it's really going to be interesting. I think, like you guys talked about, there's matchups in terms of individual matchups, but it's almost more of a team matchup and coaching, like how defensive scheme are we going to kind of slow down Giannis, slow down Kyrie, whatever it may be. I think something interesting to point out is Al Horford versus Brooke Lopez. And I want to say in the times they've faced each other, Horford had a major advantage in the plus minus in terms of being on the floor together. So what are they going to do with that? You know, is Horford going to expose him? Is Lopez going to stretch out the floor and open it up and hurt the Celtics defense, not allow them to kind of shut down the paint? It's going to be interesting. Even the lineups and the rotations that Brad Stevens throws out there. Are we going to see a lot of Aaron Baines, who had some success against Giannis last year? Are we going to see more of a smaller lineup? Same thing on Milwaukee side. Both teams are filled with a lot of good players. It's not like a lot of guys in these teams can't play. They can go out there and they can play, and they have different options going up to probably 12 guys on each team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like Milwaukee's getting really good minutes out of Sterling Brown, like who started a couple of games for them in the playoffs. DJ Wilson, Ersan Ilyasova, both teams exceptionally deep. And yes, the Sixers, like the Celtics, for sure are going to throw as many looks as they can at Giannis to see just, you know, what sticks. Throw everything at the wall and see what hangs up there. What can slow down the Greek freak? But absolutely, like this is going to be a whole roster versus another whole roster. You know, I think very much not a whole lot of individual performances here.
And two non-all-star players that just have the ability to get really hot. I would look at a guy like Marcus Morris. We saw last year in the postseason get really hot and almost win games for Boston. Then on the Bucks side, you look at Nikola Mirotic, a guy who can get really hot from deep, knock down a ton of threes, and kind of change the way the game is going. So there's just so many players in this series that could go one way or another. There's a lot of talent, a lot of options for both coaches. But moving on from there, what's the X factors in the series?
Ooh, Corey, you can take the first X factor.
I mean, one X factor, we didn't even mention this, is Marcus Smart. Does he come back at all this series? How healthy does Marcus Smart get if he does come back? But I think X factors are guys like Nick just mentioned, you know, Marcus Morris. Can he be an offensive spark plug? I know in game one against the Pacers, although Marcus Morris didn't have a great first round series, he came in that first game in an 84-74 slugfest. I think he had like 14 points off the bench, but he had 10 points like right away, and he was like 4 for 4 from the field. I was like, of course, this is going to be the guy who's on fire and beats the Pacers, which they did. So Marcus Morris is the guy I'm looking at. And then from the Bucks perspective, you know, Pat Connaughton, George Hill, to me, those are X factors. You know, George Hill had a really good game one, I believe, against Detroit, kind of stepped up in the absence of Malcolm Brogdon. Pat Connaughton was pretty much electric. He shot fantastic all series for the Bucks. Can he keep that up? So I'm looking more so at bench players to be the X factor, because I think you know what you're getting from Chris Middleton, Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving, Al Horford. You know these guys are going to be the stars. Who can step up? Can Brook Lopez be an X factor? Obviously, he's probably the highest volume three-point shooter on the Bucks, but again, he'd be the best three-point shooter on the Bucks. Can he get those same type of looks that really stretches out a defense? Can he pull Al Horford away from the rim? Obviously, the Celtics aren't a great rebounding team. They're better this year with Aaron Baines and some of the size they have, but they're still not a fantastic rebounding team. I could probably think of a couple more X factors. Jaylen Brown, can he be efficient? Can he be effective? Because sometimes you get Jaylen Brown moments where I think he was at one point in game three, I think he was a 7 of 7 for against the Pacers. Yep. So, you know, can he be all of a sudden like the second best player on the Celtics? Terry Rozier, can he be efficient coming off the bench? Eric Bledsoe had a career year. Can he keep that up? I could pretty much go on the X factor list for every single player, because I think in a series like this, you know, in a matchup like this where there's so much talent, some of these guys are going to pop off as X factors because they're going to have such a big impact on the game.
And I think an X factor you didn't touch on is how do these teams adjust to facing a lot better team in the next round? And that's no offense to the Pacers. They had trouble scoring the entire series. The Bucks are not going to have any trouble scoring. They're a dominant offensive team. Look at the same thing for the Bucks, though. They went against the Pistons without their best player. No, Detroit without Blake Griffin isn't even a playoff team. And they just have a lot of guys in that squad where they were depending on Luke Kennard to win them games. Like, and no offense to Luke Kennard, second-year player, very good, but he doesn't have the juice to do that yet in the NBA.
No, absolutely not. Like, yeah, Corey, you just broke down the fact that pretty much every single player in this is an X factor. You know, you only know what you're going to get from, like, the starters, basically. And then after that, everybody down the bench, they could all swing the whole series, right? Like, how good is Brogdon going to look coming back? You know, how good is Marcus Smart going to be? You know, these guys are jumping right into playoff action, right? They missed the whole first round against, like Nick has just mentioned, like weaker competition. And now they're playing at a really high level. And, you know, what are they going to make of that? who's going to shine. And honestly, like, yeah, Jaylen Brown can steal a game for them. So can Tatum. But then on the, like, on the Bucks side of the things, like, you know, Bledsoe can go off for a crazy game. So can Middleton. So can Mirotic. So this series just, oh, everybody's got so much pull on the eventual outcome.
If Bledsoe is really locked in, that could just, like, change the entire series. Like, I've watched him locked in. I've watched him a good amount this year. But then when he played the Nets, he was really pissed about D'Angelo Russell making the All-Star team over him. And I swear to God, he turned up his playing ability up, like, two levels. He went from, like, an 88 rating to, like, a 96. He was locking it down defensively, offensively, just attacking, super aggressive. I think he has to have extra motivation after the embarrassment last year, especially to a guy like Terry Rozier, who has not been a good NBA player this season. He's been super inefficient.
Yeah, Bledsoe just got that money, and he has to show it out on the court, right? He just got that extension money, and he cannot – he has to, you know, compete with Kyrie Irving. Forget Terry Rozier, right? Like, he should have blown past that guy that, like, earlier this season in terms of fitness and overall playing level. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be really intriguing. Like you talked about before, I think rotations and coaching is going to be a huge factor for both guys because there's no limit in terms of weapons both teams have. It's like, can you put the right weapons out there for the matchups, and can you stop them defensively, scoring them offensively? It's going to be a real coaching battle, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's like a type of thing where you see a lot of back and forth in terms of the series where it's like one game you're like, oh, look, looks like Milwaukee's going to take care of them, or next game Boston's going to do their business. But moving on, what's a prediction for you guys?
I think this one's 4-3 Bucks.
Bucks and five.
Whoa. Oh my goodness!
I was serious.
He just blew on his nails. Was that what I just saw?
You're yeah. Like, it's a, we got a the hand's hot. The hand's hot for the take. It's Bucks and five. I'm sorry. I keep seeing Celtic fans tweet like, oh, we went seven last year. We didn't have all of our guys. It's like, you're right. You didn't have all your guys, and you had all your guys this year, and you could barely get past the Pacers, who don't have Oladipo. Now, granted, I'm not discrediting the Celtics defense. Their defense is really good. It's still a good defense, but the offense isn't that good. I mean, Kyrie Irving gets his, Jason Tatum gets his. They're playing against another very good defense in Milwaukee with a better offense and guys who can actually score and spread the floor. They face the Pacers team who can't shoot three-pointers. They're facing a team now that can play, that can shoot three-pointers. Now, granted, I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout by any means. I think it's going to be a tightly contested series, but I think the Bucks are just more poised for this. And I also take into account that we mentioned Eric Bledsoe last year. I think there's just more of a chip on my shoulder, something to prove on the Milwaukee Bucks team than there is on the Boston Celtics. It just feels like they've been kind of lackadaisical this entire season. And I think Antetokounmpo just comes out dominant. Bucks in five. I'm sticking with it.
That is spicy, and that'll definitely be the video clip I share when I post this on Twitter. You know, I'm going Bucks in seven, and I even feel like I could go the other way, like with Boston, just because there's so much talent, and you look at a guy like Kyrie Irving, and I think that's like the factor. And I heard someone bring this up on a podcast. It might have been JBT, Nick, and Jack talking about if Giannis like gets hot, I think you can adjust and try to stop him a little bit. But if Kyrie gets to that point where he's like on Tuck Kyrie and he's just knocking down shots from everywhere on the floor, contested, off contested, and he's dealt with the likes of like Golden State before, a lot of it's going to come down to what can Giannis do, especially when the team, you know, is completely game planning to stop him. And Brad Stevens is a smart coach. We talked about him not, you know, getting necessarily the accomplishments and he's getting the credit first, but he is a guy who can make adjustments and kind of disrupt the player. So I'm really intrigued with that and who's going to be more dominant, Giannis or Kyrie. And I think that'll be a really big factor in the series.
The one thing I will say, then this could be, I could be wrong on this, but this is what my personal perspective. I think the Bucks have a lot more defensive weapons to throw at Kyrie Irving than the Celtics have on Antetokounmpo. Like, I think there's a better chance we see Kyrie Irving struggle this series than we do Antetokounmpo. Now, granted, there's different ways to affect Antetokounmpo because his jump shot isn't that great. But I think, you know, if Brogdon's healthy, George Hill is still a decent defender. You have guys like Chris Middleton. I mean, obviously, I think speed-wise and athleticism, Kyrie probably toasts Chris Middleton. But Chris Middleton is a very good defender. He has length. I think there's a lot of different options you can throw at Kyrie. But again, you know, untucked Kyrie is a god. So that's like turning Super Saiyan 4 or whatever other nerd term you want to throw at Kyrie. When he gets his jersey untucked, he's a different animal. But I think you could have a better chance of limiting Kyrie in this series than you do Antetokounmpo.
I think in terms of stopping both guys, it's almost a little bit different where Kyrie stopping him is almost more about an individual matchup. If you're stopping Giannis, it's more about a team matchup. It's like, all right, we're going to kind of set up a wall, but then it's like, hey, is Milwaukee knocking down the shots? And that's why we talked about role players playing a really big role in this series in terms of knocking down threes and just doing the small things. I think three-point shooting, we didn't touch on an X factor, but it's an X factor in every playoff series. We saw it in the first round. Teams that shoot well from three usually win the game. Team that shoots bad doesn't usually win. Golden State last night was probably an outlier, but they didn't knock down the threes late. But three-point shooting is always a factor, especially when it comes from the role players.
That's a great point on the defensive strategy. I think you're right. It's for Irving, it's a one-on-one. For Antetokounmpo, it's a team. And I got to be honest, the minute you say formal building, yeah, all I thought was formal fucking wall.
Yeah, Dan Van Gundy.
And obviously, if we're all picking Bucks, we're all picking Giannis to be MVP. Same thing we did for the first round, though.
Did you say how? What'd you pick? You didn't
Bucks
pick
and seven. Bucks and seven.
Oh, you picked Bucks and seven? All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, like, I could go to Celtics. I could see that argument, but I'm going with the Bucks. I think they've just been more dominant. And the fact you brought up that they've been more engaged all season long. And I think that does matter. You can't really just turn a switch when you're facing an excellent team. If they were facing the Sixers, who they've had, you know, done work with in the past, it might feel a little bit better. But the fact that it is Milwaukee, who is just straight, just like murdered Detroit. Like, those games weren't even worth watching.
And I think another point we can make is the Boston Celtics have eliminated the Milwaukee Bucks the last 2 years in the playoffs, correct?
I know last year. I'm not sure about the year before.
I want to say last two. I'll double check that. But I think that's another thing. If it is what I think it is 2 years in a row, then that's another added element of the fact that the Bucks, you know, want to finally get over the hump against the team that keeps knocking them out of the playoffs. Even still, last year, it being a seven-game series, you know, that to me proves enough.
But they didn't have Kyrie. I think, like, even as much as we want to talk about last year, the teams are so different because you have Kyrie and Gordon Hayward now. Guys have taken another step on the Boston side. And then Milwaukee, the schemes they run are, like, completely different. And Giannis is, like, ascended to another level. Last year, he was just an all-star. He was a really good player. He was in that top 10 talk. Now this year, he's been a top five player, top three, some might say top one.
Yeah, and, like, Milwaukee had shooters last year, but this year they have shooters. Like,
shooters better, too.
Filled out, yeah. Like, this is like Mirotić, Lopez, Middleton, Ilyasova, like Sterling Brown's hitting threes, Tony Snell, Brogdon. Like, when they're healthy, like, this team is just built so well around Giannis. You know, like, a lot of the four teams remaining, you can make an argument that the Sixers probably have one of the worst in terms of, like, roster construction, and then Milwaukee might be among the best, you know, just in terms of how well they utilize the talents of Giannis, you know, their singular superstar. And they just filled out the team with just I think the Celtics are gonna have a really hard time keeping up with the barrage of shooters that the Bucks have. That will probably be what gives them the advantage in the seven game series. Like, I think the Celtics probably have a lot more guys who can go spottier from the field every night versus, like, Milwaukee's just a little bit more consistent. And then again, like, matching up the individual superstars, I think Kyrie can have two or three great games in a series as opposed to Giannis. Like, I think Giannis has the goods to show up every single game of every single, like, of the whole series. So, like, that's just what tips it a little bit in Milwaukee's favor to me.
And I will say the Bucks lost in 2017 to the Raptors, so it wasn't two straight years.
Gotcha. But there was a lot of tension, obviously, last year, too, with the whole Eric Bledsoe and Terry Rozier thing, which kind of escalated things.
And we didn't talk about it. I also think a big area for this series will be turnovers. Both teams love to get out in transition. The Celtics last series were really sloppy against the Pacers. One of the reasons the Pacers were able to stay into it was the fact that the Celtics were sloppy. You really don't want to get sloppy with the Milwaukee Bucks because they do have three-point shooters. Antetokounmpo does phenomenal things in the open court. And also, something to note, I know we already talked about rebounding, but the Milwaukee Bucks were the best team rebounding team in the NBA. That could be an issue for the Celtics.
And I think it looks at, like, a lot of different positions too, and guys they can kind of have an advantage in terms of the rebounding department, in terms of physicality. But guys, like we did for the Sixers and Raptors series, top three players of the Bucks win, top three players of the Celtics win.
Okay, so for the Bucks, it's got to be Giannis, Middleton, Bledsoe, and then for the Celtics, I'd go Irving, Horford, Hayward.
Ooh.
For the Bucks, it's Antetokounmpo, Middleton, Bledsoe. And then for the Celtics, I would say Irving Tatum.
You got to be Horford.
It's got to be Horford. But I think Brown on the perimeter defense between Middleton and it probably is Horford, but I feel like Jaylen Brown's a huge key to this series because he's probably one of the best wing defenders the Celtics have. So I think even though you need Hayward to be really good offensively, you need Jaylen Brown to be efficient offensively, maybe not anything special, but to be more importantly effective on defense and be able to limit some of these guys. I think Horford realistically, because you need him to be the best rebounder for your team. So it probably is Hal Horford third, and he does everything.
And you need him to expose Brook Lopez and keep him off the court, and it kind of messes up the floor spacing, not having him out there. I think same thing for the Bucks, same as you guys, you know, obviously Giannis, Middleton, and Bledsoe. You know, there could be an argument for, you know, one of the 50 players that we talked about in terms on the Bucks side. And then the Celtics side, I'm going with obviously Kyrie, Al Horford, and then Jason Tatum, because I think as much as I want to pick Jaylen Brown or Gordon Hayward or somebody else, Jason Tatum has the talent level that could be a major problem, especially with the ability to knock down contested shots.
I want to say one thing too. We could see in this series, you know, if even if Brook Lopez, let's say they neutralize him. I mean, Antetokounmpo at the five against Al Horford is a mismatch. And it's an absolute in favor of the Milwaukee Bucks. If they have Antetokounmpo playing the five and then you just put a bunch of floor spacers out there, it could be an issue.
I think Al Horford on Giannis is going to be a matchup that we'll see in the series. And it's going to be an interesting one because he's obviously one of the most intelligent defenders. And he's done a great job against other superstars, one being Joel Embiid, who's dominant inside, but in a different way. Obviously, Boston might throw out someone like Semi Ojeleye, just a big body. They worked a little bit on Giannis last year. But like we talked about, it's going to be a lot of team defense. But I think in terms of both teams are going to rotate a lot of individual matchups on the star players. You know, Kyrie's going to see different Bucks. Giannis is going to see different Celtics. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we get out of here?
Allergies suck.
Yeah, it sounds like from both of you. All right, guys, that wraps it up. As always, a pleasure talking hoops. Check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube.
Peace out, Knuckleheads.